I'm Carol Warren. I work for People. I forgot to introduce myself, but you don't care. I wanted to start things off. Since Mr. Rudd helped write the first movie and now this movie, do you all feel that he gave you guys as many good lines as he gave himself?
Well, I gave himself more funny lines.
His best lines in the movie are not in the script.
Oh. Will that be on the DVD then, Mr. Reed?
Oh, awesome. Yeah. No, I mean, I've said this before, I think, Paul's as generous a writer as he is an actor. Like, he's, that's a concern if someone's writing, Paul can easily say, I'm getting all the lines, I'm not going to say this or do this, but, Paul always has the whole picture in mind when he's writing and acting. Is that correct, Paul?
I'm trying to think of the film as a whole, and it's nice to have a character. But I will say this. This has been a collaborative effort more than anything I've ever worked on. And to think that I actually wrote it would be, I think, a gross overstatement. The truth of the matter is, Hayden was in the room, has been working on this for a long time, same with our producer, Steve Broussard, same with Kevin, but in particular, two writers, Eric Summers and Chris McCann, who did really a lot of the heavy lifting. And those guys are great. I tip my cap to them.
For you, Mr. Reed, what in this movie was kind of the most daunting sequence and you were happiest to have finished when you filmed it?
The most daunting sequence. There were a lot of daunting sequences. We really wanted to set out and go nuts with the particle technology in this movie. And it occurred to us at some point, well, maybe it's not just Ant-Man and Wasp who can really grow and what were vehicles and buildings and other things. And we really wanted to go nuts with it. But what that did was create some real technical challenges. So I think maybe the biggest is we did a whole car chase that took us through the city of San Francisco. And we wanted to do a chase that just simply wouldn't see in the other movie because of all the side shifting. So that was probably the biggest challenge.
What was the street closure situation like from beginning to end?
Well, something we thought about a lot because when we decided we want to spend more time in the streets of San Francisco. Sorry, Michael. I did it.
Out of the game, too.
We wanted to do all these very specific things and make San Francisco a character in the movie, but utilize the city and make this chase specific to that city, to the landmarks, things like Lombard Street. But then it occurred to us, we might not be allowed to do that. But thankfully, the city of San Francisco was so cooperative, and we really had free range to do some of the craziest things in that city.
For you, Mr. Feige, and our group today, our collective effort always is to get Mr. Feige to say something he's not supposed to, which he never does. But we're going to try, right?
Today's the day.
Yes. Speaking of the quantum realm and how we've been introduced to it and now in two films, three with Doctor Strange, what is the future of the quantum realm? Are we going to see it in future films?
Without giving anything away, we love, these, they're all storytelling tools, new places, new things. In the first film, we got a glimpse of it, and for people who like to go through frame by frame, there was a little silhouette of Janet as the Wasp in there, which is a big story element in this movie. There are things that you see back there that Hayden has put in there. Where and how they pay off in the near term and the long term remains to be seen.
Magic, right? A magic non-answer. Definitely is. For you, Miss Lily, I would love to hear a little bit about, I have to say that maybe since Wonder Woman, I get a little weepy anytime I'm watching women kick ass in a movie. So I'm just wondering kind of your favorite part of that wonderful fight sequence in the kitchen, or just kind of on the whole, what you loved doing with Hope and the Wasp in this film.
Shit moment, but then she's completely in control the next second. It was just fun to finally get to see her take all the time. Like, this is something that she's been ready and willing to do for basically her whole life. Her parents are both superheroes, and she was really putting that suit for an entire film. And we never get there, and so to actually see her fighting in that moment was
wonderful. Nice, nice. Is anyone more competent than others in explaining quantum theory in the quantum realm? Do you feel comfortable?
Oh, Michael's the guy.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
I was just wondering if anyone is comfortable kind of explaining some of the quantum science that we play with in film.
And so, well, I actually Peyton cast me for this role because he did find out that I had a degree in quantum mechanics. I would have to read the script again. Proper definition of the quantum realm. I know he was very, very small. Subatomic.
Gotcha. Well stated.
I actually can answer that question. Because I really love quantum physics, and always did before this happened, and that's one of the reasons I was excited about this brand, was I really take quantum physics. And at one point we thought that atom was the beyond, that everything ended up the atom, that was the smallest nucleus in the world, but actually we discovered that the atom was kinetic, and that atoms exist in multiple places at the same time. And that was scientifically proven, and once you discover that, then you know that matter is kinetic and matter is displacing all the time. If it can displace, it can do more. And so if you can
What if the way you see blue is the way I see red?
Oh, dear!
I think that's a good opening for my fellow journalists. You guys ready to ask some questions? Red?
Hi, this question is for Paul and Peyton. Paul, this is actually the third time you've played Ant-Man. So how did you and Peyton approach this, not only as the sequel to Ant-Man, but a sequel to Captain America Civil War?
I'll start. It actually was, and it's a really good point you make, it is a sequel to both movies. And what was cool about Captain America Civil War is we could not ignore what had happened to Scott Lang in that movie, in this movie. And it gave us an organic jumping off point, because my first reaction was, what would Hank Pym and Hope Van Dyne think about Scott taking the suit and getting involved with this in fighting the Avengers? Well, they'd be pissed off. So it really gave us this whole starting point where it's like, well, what if they were estranged at the beginning of the movie as a result of this? There are ramifications of the Sokovia Accords and Scott being on house arrest, and it really gave us a natural starting point. So.
And Paul, is your third time playing him?
Well, one of the things that was kind of nice is it gave us, I felt, a little bit of leeway to lean into something maybe a little harder than we would have been able to at first, because now the character has been established. We've seen Scott in two other films. People buy the abilities, they buy me in the role, they understand the rules. So it felt as if we had a little bit more freedom to play into the humor. Would Scott do this? Would he make this? Would he say this kind of thing? Would he make this kind of choice? Whereas I think the first time around, we were still modulating. And so that was one of the really fun parts about this. I feel like we kind of went into it with, let's try it. Let's go. People know who this guy is already.
On this side? Yeah.
Mr. Douglas, what did you think of yourself digitally done? And what era, Michael Douglas, do you think that is? Is that Gordon Gekko, Michael Douglas?
I look pretty good.
You did. You look great. You look fantastic.
My wife
tremendous fan of his Never Batting a Check. He worked with Bill. I was totally ecstatic. And then in reading the script, to find out that Michelle Pfeiffer and I were going to be 30 years younger. He made it all that much better. It was a treat, and the remains to be seen were all just good to go.
This side. Yeah. Well, on that, Paul, how was it channeling Michelle Pfeiffer?
I feel like I've been doing that for years. Every time we would refer to that, we kept calling it the all of me sequence. And we had many conversations about it earlier. It just seems like a fairly big swing. It was surreal to say the least. And then in those moments, you know, as an actor, you have to buy into the scenario and you're playing the truth of the moment. But at the same time, as me being and Michael being Michael, when I have my hand tenderly to his cheek and staring in the eyes, and we giggled about it.
Was Miss Pfeiffer on set that day when you were doing that?
Oh, I would never been able to do that.
So your character, there's so many antagonists and villains, and antagonists in this role. I always ask the villains, like the villains, what's their purpose, and do they see themselves as the villain?
Absolutely not. I think, you know, I definitely approach the character not as a villain, or definitely a threat to the characters and the heroes of the movie. But when I guess you play a villain, you have to play by like, you're the good guy and everyone else is bad. So everyone else is bad, going to be bad. So, and she has, I mean, the stakes are so high. She has such a clear objective in the movie. And, you know,
everyone
for himself.
Everyone
for himself.
Yeah, you're back.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, follow up to that one.
It's apparent to me that the Marvel villain seems to be evolving. They seem to be less after Thanos, I suppose. Is that on purpose, or I'm just imagining it?
What's the question, that they're less what?
After Thanos, the villains seem to be evolving. They seem to be lesser.
I think with the villains, I mean, what Marvel universe do so well is it's not black and white. It's very gray, you know. And I think the villains are very redeemable because they're fun and you want to see them again.
By the way, has there only been one villain after Thanos?
Seems like all the villains.
I have a 7-year-old son and he loves violent movies. He likes to taunt me by telling me, "Mom, I love violence." You know, my and he always, when he talks about good guys and bad guys in movies, I always feel a responsibility to clarify for him. And you know that there really is no such thing as bad guy, right? That they're only just good guys who have made so many bad choices, they've forgotten how to make good choices. And a true hero's job is to remind them of their goodness, not to annihilate them, to kill them, it's to help them redeem themselves. And I think that's applicable to life. Superhero stories are fun and they're a totally different world, but what I think is cool is that to have redeemable villains, you're teaching children that if you encounter somebody that might have a different opinion, that doesn't mean they're a villain. If they have a different objective, then it doesn't mean you should attack them. Maybe you want to try to understand them first.
I'm just going to interject for a second. Mr. Fishburne, was this the first Marvel role that came your way, and how come it's taken so long for us to see you in a Marvel movie?
It is not the first Marvel role to come my way. In fact, years and years ago, I ran into a guy named Tim Story, Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, and I said to him, "I am Norman Rad." And he said, "Who?" And I said, "I am Norman Rad, and Norman Rad is the guy who becomes the Silver Surfer and works with Galactus and all that stuff." So I voiced the Silver Surfer, Rise of the Silver Surfer. been a reader since I was 8, a fan of my life, and really enjoyed the movies and everything that, you know, they've done in the MCU. Fantastic. What they've done is brilliantly braid the source material with and bring it into the now. And I realized that I was on the lot of Marvel, working at Blackish at ABC Disney, and remembered that I had worked with Lewis, you know, 100 years ago. And I thought, I should go talk to them, say, hey, what do I got to do? Who's got to be in movies? And they were kind enough to... Well, they were kind enough to say, yeah, we'll think about that. A couple of weeks later, they were like, you know about this guy? And oddly enough, it was a guy I didn't know about. Although I was a Marvel reader and a DC, most of Marvel, I did not know about Will Clark or anybody. And as I think, and Wasp became Avengers at some point.
Oh, yeah, yeah, they're running the cover.
So that's why I knew about Hank Pym, I knew about the article and all that, but I never got to Foster because I was never in Hank Pym. So Peyton sent me down and was like, blah, 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 blah.
I've got to congratulate all of you. This is, the humor in this film is so family friendly. Little kids are going to love the humor in this film. It sets it apart and distinguishes it from the other films in the MCU, I think. So kudos to you, Paul, as one of the writers, to you, Peyton. Really well done. But I want to ask Peyton, on a technical level, the editing in this film is so perfect. It is so rapier. Dan and Craig, what kind of tortures of the damned did you guys go through to establish your pacing, but particularly with that third act interlineating between the car chase, quantum realm, car chase, quantum realm? I was on the edge of my seat that entire sequencing. It was so tight.
Thank you. Yeah, well, first of all, we had to be incredibly talented editors in Leventhal, Craig Wood. They're supremely talented, and we've worked with them before. And we knew that sequence, you know, we were in cross-talking, as you said, between the chase and the quantum realm, and both informed the other one. And it's just a matter of, like, going through the whole process of how tight can we make it, shifting things around, and, you know, you always have a plan going in, and we were really meticulous in the way we planned it. Then you get in the editing room, you discover things, and it's a whole other part of the process. And what if we put this here and did this and having the build? So it's just constantly refining the thing, and it's you know, we wanted it to be as tight as possible. We always had this Ant-Man philosophy on the first movie and on this one. I always wanted these movies to be under 2 hours. Firstly, because they're comedies, and secondly, because the first one's sort of a heist movie, and this is still sort of a crime slash science fiction slash Elmore Leonard novel as Marvel movie thing that needed to have a lot of forward momentum. And we looked at a lot of things, you know, from Bullet, Steve Green movie, and then of course What's Up Doc, the Mike Myers movie, which has the most insane chase in San Francisco. These are the inspirations to the movie. But thank you for saying that. Yeah, because it was you know, trying to get everything to work and be as tight as possible.
Way in the very back.
My question is for, excuse me, Paul and for Evangeline. Again, I think the humor in this is fantastic as well. And I think what really grounds Ant-Man and the Wasp is that he is a parent. And you don't get that. I mean, and he's a regular guy, regular people. They're not super soldiers or raging monsters or things like that. So how do you think that that's a different, and how do you think that that comes across, and what, how do you draw from that?
Well, it's true, this theme of, you know, parents and children run throughout the film. fathers and daughters. And something that's relatable, because whether or not we have children of our own, many people do, we all have parents. And the idea that I'm playing somebody that, like you said, doesn't have innate super abilities, is a way in. I want it to be relatable. I can relate to the character that way. It's certainly when I'm thinking about it, we're talking about story and script and everything, that's the approach. I have a daughter roughly the age of Cassie in the film. She's a little bit younger. And while I know for a fact she's going to want me to build a slide, it's really hard to do it in a New York apartment. I know what it's like to spend the evening playing with Barbie dolls. And I know, that's the glue, that's the soul of it. The love that a family shares and how we need each other. Parents need their kids need their parents. And if we could somehow build a very funny movie, one that appeals to all ages, that families and kids could see, but that actually still has all of the elements that it fits in the Marvel universe and all ages are going to be wowed by certain. That idea that I can identify myself in that role was huge.
Let's go way in the back again.
I thought Wasp was fantastic, as I told you when we talked yesterday. And we all want to see more of her. We've seen her interact with Scott Lang, who's kind of a knucklehead. Sorry, Paul. We may see her with other characters in the future, so I'm curious of all the personalities, both cast members and characters in the MCU. Is there anybody who you think Wasp would be a lot of fun to see interact with?
Well, first of all, I just want to qualify a very lovable knucklehead. I used to say, because I was asked this question prior to this movie, and I used to say it would be fun to see the Wasp with the Hulk because she'd be so teeny and he'd be so giant, but then we did Giant Man and the Wasp, so that's out. I don't know, but I just personally have an enormous crush on Okoye and would love a chance to hang out with Denai as much as possible, so let's just say that. Besides the fact that I am personally going to continue to keep the rumor gossip about an all-female Avengers film.
How are we coming on that, Kevin?
Very well. All coming.
Hello, Michael Peña is not here, but we have to talk about Luis. Mr. Payton, how much fun was for you to kind of expand his role and for Paul and Evangeline the chance to play in his storytelling flashback something?
Well, I think it's important. I've never done a sequel before. And I think one of the things I like in sequels that I like is progressing the characters. So really, in looking at the characters of Luis and Kurt and Dave, the ex-con guys, in the first movie, they're ex-cons and they're really trying to stay out of a life of crime, and they discover what it feels like to be a hero. And this thing, it really felt like, let's start them from a place where they're on the straight and narrow now. They're trying to start a small business, and Scott's involved in that business, and he's almost out of house arrest. And are they going to make a go of this business? I like the idea that this movie could have huge stakes, huge personal stakes, but also the success of their business also has huge stakes. And particularly for Scott, I think that's something he's really wrestling with. And in terms of the Luis storytelling, that's always a fun thing to shoot. And what we do basically is we shoot Michael telling the whole story. I'll cut together, the preferred takes and do basically what we call a radio cut. And then, for example, if it's Paul or Evangeline's turn to do their lip syncing, we'll take that little section on set, play it over and over through speakers so they can hear it, and then just go at it multiple times. And suddenly get a performance in it, and something that sinks, but that was really fun too. It was fun for me to do. I don't know how much fun it was for you guys to do.
I got asked earlier today, what was your favorite scene in the movie to shoot? And I said, doing the Mrs.
Yeah, it's fun. Okay, one more time, because he punches. He's such a funny actor. He punches words, and to try and hit those, and try and get the rhythms out. It actually was a little trickier than it looked, at least for me. But it's super fun.
Yes. Second, yeah, right there. You, sir. Yes.
Hi, this is for Kevin and perhaps Evangeline and Peyton might want to chip in. Can you talk us through, bearing in mind what was just said about the Avengers, can you talk us through the kind of decision not to make this Ant-Man 2, but to make it the double-header, the equal billing Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is obviously the first titular superheroine, I think, in the MCU?
Yeah, and that was the first idea of the movie before clearly, that film, the first Ant-Man film, essentially is all about how qualified Hope is and her estrangement from her father to prevent her from doing this. And it was without question, and that tag of what ended up being the tag on the first Ant-Man film was in there from the beginning, which is her finding that suit and saying it's about damn time. So we always knew that the next one was going to be Ant-Man and the Wasp, and that it would finally be time to see her suit up and be the hero. As she said earlier, she was born.
Can you just say my name again?
Evangeline.
Oh, it sounds great when you're asking. I can add to that originally Wasp was going to be introduced in Captain America Civil War. That was the original plan. And I never expressed it at the time, because of course, how can you? But like secretly, I was like, she's not going to get an origin spill. Oh well, you know, like, it's okay, I'm just stoked to be here, dude. Like, I'm just happy that I get to put on a suit. And then when I got a call saying, we decided not to put you in Civil War, and there was this moment I could tell where the feeling in the room was like, don't, like, I'm sorry, it's like, don't be offended. And I was like, no, are they going to say what I think they're going to say? And then they said what I thought they were going to say, which is because we really wanted to dedicate a film to introducing this female superhero. And we don't want her just to be a side note in this larger story. And that was so exciting for me. And then I still didn't know that there was going to be double billing. That didn't come till later, and that was presented to me as a surprise by an email with a screen cap of the title. And so that was pretty cool.
Good, close. I might have to call in a couple minutes. How about, yeah, you, sir. Yeah.
Me?
Yes. You. Yeah.
So I love the objects that become big in this movie. The first one with the first movie, Thomas the Train, and then this one, the Pez dispenser and the salt shaker. For future Ant-Man and the Wasp stories, are there any objects that you would like to see become big, get the big treatment?
This, by the way, was my favorite thing on set that was grown. This bread clip was not arbitrary. In the lab, we had cables running through it. That's what I used to clip all of the cables together. You can kind of see it in the background, these big bread clips. I can't think of anything that I'd like to see.
I'd like to be able to shrink and fly. I mean, I don't know about shrinking other things, but I'd like to. That
would be cool.
I can't
think of
an object either.
For the
next,
for the
Cassie's
wanted.
Oh, you mean the next
movie,
right?
You have to think for real. We're officially all
like this.
Cassie's rabbit.
Yeah.
Cassie's
rabbit. Done. We should ask for a 10% cut. That happens. Back on the very back over there.
I'm just wondering if there's a chance, and I know there's limits on what you can and can't say, but I'm wondering if there's a chance that Hannah and Lawrence will return as kind of a team-up of sorts, if he could become Goliath again and she gets more control of her powers, or maybe like the Red Queen and Mr. Big or something like that.
Good question.
Nice. I like it.
Well, you know, what's always great is that's the mark of a movie that works, is when people say, I love those characters, when can we see them again? And that's certainly what Hannah and Lawrence have done, both these characters. So they're both still alive.
He's like a
Bobo
ninja.
I know, it's very frustrating as a journalist. Real quick for Hannah, I was just wondering if you could kind of quickly take us through how they actually filmed the visual effects for how you were doing the quantum phasing. I just the actual finished project is so neat. I don't know how you actually filmed it.
The finished project is neat. When I watched it, I was like, oh, that looks really, really cool. There were no limitations to me actually filming. It was very freeing because it was like, no, just do the scene and do the stunts. And, you know, it wouldn't be stop, 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 stop for any visual effects. The visual effects came later. But yeah, it looks really good. I'm so happy.
It does look really good. Are we on this side or which side? I forgot. Right here, right there. Yeah. For Jeff.
I really love the fact that the Wasp is better adept at her suit than Ant-Man. So that was really awesome. When you were writing it, Paul, was that, whose idea was that, that, you know, the Wasp is better at it than, you know, well, than Scott? Always, Scott's still learning.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Hope was born into this, and it's a family business. And I think in the first one, it was pretty clear. She would be really good at this. You know, the didn't seem to have any sort of anything really getting in the way of it, ability-wise, clearly. You know, the idea that Scott was never really sure how he could be the best, be Ant-Man and still be a good parent, and those two things can coexist, that's really what we wanted to hang this thing on, that kind of dilemma. So one of the things that I like about it is that it really is a duo and a team, and we learn to, you know, we work together, and we work together pretty well. But you're absolutely right. I think from the get-go, I'm like, well, no, clearly, she's really good at this.
This side. Two more. I think we have time for two more. Who can I get? Yes, far side, yeah.
Yes, question for Peyton. Have there been any talks about you returning for a third film in the series? And if you do, will you be cutting Tom Sharpling from that movie too?
Well, we never know if there's going to be a next one. It's always a mystery. We can be hopeful. I know there are other stories that I would love to tell with these characters. As for the Sharpling dilemma, I certainly look forward to working with Sharpley in the future and hopefully cutting him out again. Thank you for the question.
All right, who's got a good last question? I think we have time for one more. Yes, you, sir, in the pink salmon shirt.
Hello, just to follow up on that, how about a prequel for the OG Ant-Man, Hank Pym?
Scientist heroes. So who knows what's next? nobody knows.
How soon is that announcement coming, Kevin?
I'd love to work with Ed, been on this couch many, many times.
So good. I think that's all we have time for, but thank you guys so much for your questions.